Ethos New York Nick podcast, Andre Gallagher. I said I was nervous. I said I was nervous against Detroit, and I was wrong about that one. Wasn't nervous about Toronto, but when Cleveland lost to Charlotte, I said it. Like, you hope that they don't pick up against the Spurs. The Knicks were in Toronto, had to fly from Toronto to San Antonio. Now they're flying from San Antonio to New York. You hope that they had the energy to come out and fight this Spurs team. The Spurs came out to a big lead. Obviously, they came out wanting blood. Wembanyama had a great game. The Knicks were slow. But if you've been watching the Knicks all year, you expect them to come back in the game. I know I expected them to come back in the game. And they did. But see, that first comeback, they got jolted. The Spurs hit them right back. And I think that took a lot of juice. That took a lot of juice out of the team. They got it down to like 13, somewhere around there. And the Spurs pushed it back up another 5-6 points. And then they had to fight again. And then they were right there going into the fourth quarter. They were right there. And then Jalen had to sit down. And the Spurs went on a 9-0 run. I was sitting there debating on as to whether or not I would even take Jalen out. But Jalen was on the minute restriction tonight. So the second unit had to hold it down, and they did not. They did not. Let's look squarely at Bogdanovich, who continues to be trash. Trash. Just pure, unadulterated trash. Giving you next to nothing, right? You didn't get any offensive explosion. Dante played well, but you didn't get any offensive explosions from him. You got some timely plays from Josh down the stretch of the game, but not throughout the game. You didn't get Deuce's points. Think about the points that Deuce has been giving you in a lot of these games. 21 points, 25 points, 29 points, a couple times. You didn't get that tonight. They weren't leaving them open. So a lot of you, when Deuce was having these explosions, a lot of you were saying, oh, we've solved the second unit problem. Now we have the backup point guard and all of that stuff. There's 29 points when you're the beneficiary, and there's 29 points when you're the creator. When Jalen Brunson scores 29 points, he's the creator. He creates those 29 points. When Deuce scores 29 points, he's creating maybe 10 of them by, you know, those pull-up jump shots he hits, contested, etc. And I'm not, you know, poo-pooing those shots. And I'm not poo-pooing those 29 points. But the Knicks need offensive creation in that second unit. And they just haven't needed it in this little stretch of games. Most of these games, they play bad teams, but when they play good teams, they got good offensive performances from guys. Guys stepped up outside of Jalen, and it was a big, big help. Getting consistent offensive creation in that second unit is a problem with Randle out. And by the way, it was a problem when Randle was in, because remember, when Randle was trying to manage that second unit on his own, he was throwing up all over himself. So that's going to be a problem going forward, but at least you want Randle on the floor. And Randle's not going to be full strength. I don't want to go into that again. But there are going to be doldrums with that second unit if you don't have Burks and Bogdanovich playing well and then not playing well. And that's what you saw early in this fourth quarter. The Spurs went on a 9-0 run because the second unit couldn't hold it down. Very frustrated. And you kind of saw it happen. You saw it happening. And when Brunson came back in the game, I thought there was a chance they would come back, but Brunson came into the game. I thought he might have been gassed, but nah. This dude's a superhero. Stop all the superstar talk. Stop. When you start talking superstars, say they need a second superstar. Don't say they need a superstar. Tell me they need a second one. Don't tell me, oh, it's the Spurs. Like, don't tell me that. Don't praise Wembanyama for the great game he had and then say, oh, it's Spurs when Brunson scored 61. Okay? This guy had to go out there and carry this damn team, and he did it. And it should have been to a victory, except the referees had other ideas. They had other ideas. 32, I think it's 32-12, the free throw disparity was. Come on, man. I'm gonna have a new policy. I don't care who it is. If there's a 32-12 free throw disparity, unless the team with 12 free throws is just shooting threes all day, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. You're just blowing the whistle for one team and not the other. And some of those whistles, I'm not saying none of them were fouls, but Wembanyama's trying to post up Hartenstein, and you calling fouls on Hartenstein. And Wembanyama's posting up Hartenstein. He's one of the better defensive centers in the league. You just gonna call fouls? Meanwhile, Brunson's coming down and guys are pushing him every single time. You're not calling the foul, but you call a little baby push on the post? Like, come on, man. Come on, man. So 32-12 free throw disparity. Listen, sometimes when teams hit threes at a rate much higher than they do over the course of the season, or at least the last 5-10 games, you kind of throw that out aberration. When you see a 32-12 free throw disparity, you just kind of say, hey, they weren't trying to let us win tonight. Bottom line. But the Knicks had their chances, but when you go to overtime and you've got a 32-12 free throw disparity, listen, man, you're not going to be able to pull that off. A 61-point effort, one short of the Knicks franchise record, doesn't matter when you lose, and I'm sure Brunson feels the same way. I didn't love the shot that they went for at the end of reg in the second I'm sorry, the overtime. I didn't love the shot, but the Knicks, they were tired. They wanted to go home. And Alan Hahn said that in the post game. I give him credit. I didn't like that shot. I thought they could. Brunson was getting better shots than that the whole game. That was like a step back three, and the guy was all over him. It doesn't usually matter if his shots are contested, but he usually creates a little bit more space than that. It was online. It was just a couple inches too long. But the Knicks wanted to go home. They didn't have any more gas. It was want to go home on that shot. Precious gets the rebound, and he it's like he gets the rebound. It was like he was gonna go right back up. And instead, he changes his mind midair and tries to throw the ball out to the 3-point line. It's one of those plays. He threw the ball out of bounds. Dante got a finger on it, couldn't finish it. Just one of those things. One of those plays. I'm not gonna put it on Precious. Mitchell Robinson seemed to hurt himself non-contact on a landing, trying to get an alley-oop. He doesn't have that burst that kind of quick twitch. Athletic move. He doesn't really have that anymore. He looks decent otherwise, but he was jumping up trying to fight for offensive rebounds, but he starts limping around after the game, so you don't know what Mitchell Robinson's situation is, and regardless of what you hear after the game, it might change in a day or so. So it's scary hours when it comes to Mitchell Robinson. A lot of the things that I told you I was concerned about with Mitchell Robinson in the offense, you see them looking for him kind of not in the same way they were looking for Hartenstein, but more so than they were before, and that's a good sign. I thought Hartenstein got missed several times today when he had mismatches on smaller players, and when the Knicks were struggling to keep up with the Spurs, those passes should have been made and they weren't. If you watch the Roommates podcast with Brunson and Hart, and they had Hartenstein on, there was a little comment, not a dig, but a comment about Jalen Brunson not making the pocket pass to Hartenstein. Hart said something, and Hartenstein mentioned something about, something we've been doing lately, making the pocket pass. So, and that, I've been talking about that for how long now? And when Brunson started to do it, I started talking about it, right? And like in the last couple of weeks, started making that pocket pass. That pass needed to be made more often to Hartenstein. And my fear is because Mitchell doesn't have the same offensive game, it's being made to Precious too. But my fear is with Mitch not having the same offensive game, they're going to stop making those passes. And I thought those opportunities were there a couple times in the first half and the passes weren't being made. But what are you going to do? Hartenstein fouls out of this game. He falls on his right wrist really bad. It looked bad. He wrapped it up, stayed in the game, ended up fouling out. You don't know what that injury is going to be. So not only did the Knicks lose the battle, but they lost the war. Okay, or potentially lost the war. Let's put it that way. So a really, really tough loss, and not one that was entirely unpredictable. The Knicks had a stretch here of soft opponents. This was the fourth one, right? And if they pulled this off, kudos. But I knew it was going to be a tough one. It was a game they had to win. No excuses. The Spurs played very well, but no excuses. They had to win this game. You can kind of understand why it's tough. The Spurs just won three games in a row. The Spurs, you know, with Wembanyama, if the Wembanyama starts hitting shots, he's scoring 40 points, getting 20 rebounds, things, you know, it's going to be hard to beat that team. Simple as that. Devin Vassell was out there looking like Michael Jordan. Well, you know, he's playing for a job. Vassell was out there playing for a job. There's no question. He was out there looking real tight in his decision-making and his shot-making. He took a bad shot near the end of regulation, though. Like, last couple of minutes, took a real bad shot. I don't know what he was thinking about right there. You didn't see a whole lot of weak side digging from the Knicks. But what the Spurs were doing is they weren't doing high screen and roll. They were doing screen and roll from kind of like the angle from like the wing. So when they got to the middle, you were really far away from the weak side help. Whereas a lot of times teams do high screen and roll, and the weak side help is right there. If you drive, you know, you drive down a lane, the weak side help comes over, they dig at you, and they make you make a pass, and they come back and recover. And the Knicks have been really, really good at that. But when you're doing it from the wing, the opposite wing, and then you're coming down, you never get that close to the weak side defender. The weak side defender has to come over way farther than usual, which creates a much more open shot. And the Knicks were reluctant to come over, and it was creating better opportunities for the Spurs. I was really mad at Mitch when he gave up that last three to Wembanyama in overtime. Mitch is bad at giving up threes to centers. He's really terrible at covering those three-point shooters. But Deuce kind of tripped in front of him, so there wasn't much he can do. Well, I don't think he was going to get out there anyway. You know, but this was a Mitch game. You saw Mitch play a lot more than Precious. I don't know why. You know, I know why, but it seemed like Precious didn't really get a chance, you know, in that fourth quarter in overtime too much. You know, I understand there's a big, you know, disparity against Wembanyama. You kind of want more length on the floor against them. But the Spurs really punched Knicks in the face in the first half, and they couldn't recover. They did recover, but they couldn't recover from the free throw disparity. You know, they just couldn't. The Knicks had to keep grinding to score, whereas the Spurs were coming down just getting to the free throw line and scoring. It's kind of tough to see. But, so where are we now? You got OKC on Sunday. I'd be shocked if Mitchell Robinson plays this game. And there's a real good chance that Hartenstein misses this game as well. So this was a tough one. This was a tough one. The Cavs won tonight. You know, you can't scoreboard watch every single night. There's too many games left in the season. I told you, 3-4 losses for the Knicks, 3-4 losses for the Cavs. That Charlotte loss was not supposed to be one of those losses, and this Spurs loss was not supposed to be one of the Knicks' losses. So they're still even on that front. The OKC games, the opportunity for the Knicks to make up for the Spurs game, but if you got no... Not having Mitchell Robinson is troublesome, obviously, because injured. He might be injured again, obviously. You know, pregnant pause on that. But the way OKC plays, you know, it might not be the best matchup for Mitchell Robinson anyway, because they shoot a lot of threes at the five position. He's not great at covering it. At the same time, he can offer some advantages on the offensive rebound front and, you know, paint presence, etc. So, you know, it could be a give and take there. You'd like to have the option, but if it's not there, it's not there. Precious can give you a lot of the same things, I think, against a team like OKC, who's not very big, not very strong. So, you know, but if you're out Hartenstein, it's going to be real tough. Because now, even though it's a good game for Jericho Sims, he's a good perimeter defender, His rim protection just isn't there, so you're not getting any kind of defense at the front of the rim when he's in the game. Not strong enough, I should say, especially with a crafty scorer like Shai. So if the Knicks can make up this loss with an OKC victory, you take it and run. You don't look at it like, oh, if they won in San Antonio and they beat OKC, they would have such and such lead. Like, nah, it doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. Probably weren't gonna win both of those games, especially with the Toronto travel to San Antonio and then travel San Antonio to New York. You're asking a ton right there. They're asking to win every single one of those games is asking a lot. Just is. They're still shorthanded, and Brunson's having to carry a lot of the load with Bogdanovich being hot trash. You know, Burks was out again this game. They played a little Shake Milton in the first half, but once again, the reason why Bogdanovich and Burks were there were for games like this when you needed offensive creation outside of Brunson, and you're just not getting it from those guys, and that's not something you get enough from Deuce, and that's where Deuce comes up short. And I'm not here to tear down Deuce because Deuce has been absolutely amazing. Give him all the credit in the world. There's been nothing but good things said about Deuce. From all points, the last couple weeks, give him all the credit in the world. I'm not here to tear him down, but that's not something he does, and that's something that they need. And when Deuce is not giving you those 29 points, 25 points on spot up jump shots, because teams are playing better defense, rotating to shooters, and Bogdanovich is not giving you anything, and Burks is not giving you anything, and you're not getting a bunch of, unexpected points from Josh Hart in transition, and Dante's not lighting it up, lighting the world on fire. Where are you getting your points from? You don't have anybody to create points when Brunson's not in the game. And when those games come up, you're gonna lose. You're gonna have a I'm not gonna say you're gonna lose, a high chance you're gonna lose. So OKC on Sunday. That could easily be two in a row. Two losses in a row. Very easily. So the Knicks gotta I'm not gonna say they have to make this, it's gonna look bad initially. I'm not gonna say they have to make this loss up because Cleveland lost to Charlotte. I'm not gonna say they have to make this loss up. But if they lose in OKC on a Sunday, they don't have a lot of leeway when it comes to playing the Bulls a bunch of times, and the Bulls lost tonight. Like, you can't, you're playing the Bulls a bunch of times, you just can't lose to the Bulls when you're playing. Bottom line, you can't. Like, it's you play them three times, so you kind of get it if they do lose a game, like, you get it. But they can't now, if they want that three seed, they can't afford to lose that game at this point. And so the Spurs, give them credit, give the referees credit. They did a wonderful job tonight. Wonderful job. If the refs wanted the Spurs to win, you couldn't have asked for more from them. All right, so let's just go through the schedule again. You got OKC on Sunday. I'm just gonna have to say that's a loss. And then you have the Heat at Miami. That might be a loss. Then you got Kings at New York. That might be a loss. And you got Bulls. Then you got Bucks. Then you got Bulls again. Then you got Celtics. Then you got Nets. And then you got Bulls. So let's just. And the reason why I'm looking at these the way I am is because I think the Knicks are going to be a little bit more. I think that Mitchell Robinson injury is going to keep him out. And I think that Hartenstein is going to be kept out. But we'll see. Let me see if my guy Steve Popper reported anything yet. Nah. Nah. All right. So let's just do the record. Say 0-1, 0-2. That's Heat and Thunder. Let's say Kings. Let's say 0-3. Let's say Bulls. Let's say 1-3. Let's say Bucks. Let's say 1-4. Let's say Bulls. Let's say 2-4. Celtics 2-5. Nets 3-5. Bulls again 4-5. So I'm now giving the Knicks an extra loss based on what happened here tonight and me being doom and gloom, it's hard to imagine the Knicks losing the Thunder, Heat, Kings. That would be four games in a row at this stage of the game, especially with two of them being at home. I think they beat the Kings if Mitchell Robinson is playing. I think they beat the Kings, to be honest with you. But the Kings did lose that first game. They got some get back that they want. And you know my theory on that. So even this Spurs game was a get back game for the Knicks. For the Spurs. And then because they have to play in Miami, and Miami's playing for so much right now, it's hard to predict that as a victory. And then again, the Thunder are a good team. That's a game I think the Knicks can win. It's just, if they're no Hartenstein and no Mitch, that's a toughie. Now, if you got Hartenstein, if it's Hartenstein and no Mitch, they got a chance. They can pull it together. But, tough one. But the Knicks are, I think, 26-3 now against teams under 500. You can't ask for more than that. They're playing half this. They play half the season without their boys, without a full squad. Mitch Robinson is still hampered, even though he's back. And I think he was mostly a positive tonight, even though he was still a little shaky. He was limping around after he had that little injury. He was mostly a positive tonight. But he's struggling. You know, he's struggling catching the ball. There's been passes that are going through his hands, alley-oops that they're throwing to him that he's just not quite ready for. He can't get up to get those alley-oops. It's just not quite there yet. His elevation just isn't quite there yet. The way he pushes off that foot, just not there. And this was one of those games you could see San Antonio had in their eyes that they wanted the victory and they got it. You wanted the Knicks to pull it out. You know, they didn't have it enough. But once again, you got one of your heroes, or the hero, Jalen Brunson, who didn't back down. And that's what you want to see. You want to see that. You want to see guys not backing down. By the way, Deuce had a chance to win the game at the end of regulation, missed an open three. You don't jump down my throat for that. But, you know, he did have an opportunity to win the game there after being down, the Knicks being down all these points. So, what can you do? What can you do? It's funny. I was going to come on the show today and make sure I made the case for Tom Thibodeau being Coach of the Year. Let me just go through that real quick. There was a lot of talk about Bickerstaff being Coach of the Year earlier in the year, and he's done a great job, and Cavs have had a lot of injuries and had to juggle the lineup a bunch of times, but not like Tibbs has. And most people thought the Cavs were better than the Knicks coming into the season. And then, even after the OG trade, people were like, I still don't see them as a top four team. Remember all that talk? So the Cavs are supposed to be better than the Knicks, but yet they're fighting with the Knicks in the standings. So don't tell me how Bickerstaff is a better coach this particular season than Thibodeau. That's not the way that's going to work. That doesn't make any sense. And then you got Dagenau in OKC, who you're going to see on Sunday. I never understood the idea that OKC was too young to win. They have one of the best players in the league and have had one of the best players in the league for a couple of years now. Jalen Williams showed himself to be a good player. Giddey's shown himself to be a good player. Everybody in the league knows this is one of the more talented teams in the league. They added the number two pick in the draft a year or so ago. Help me understand. Why they're too young to win. I don't get that. This is the regular season. It's not like if you said they're too young to win in the playoffs, I'd be like, okay, all right. But not the regular season. What does that mean? What does that even mean? They're too young. Are the Pacers too young? Were the Pacers too young to be winning all those games they were winning? It's not that. People saying OKC was too young to win when they're one of the more talented teams in the league never made sense to me. And sometimes with Coach of the Year, you win Coach of the Year because the media collectively sees you as overachieving. I don't see them as overachieving. I see them as doing exactly what a team that talented probably should do. You want to say, oh, well, they're fighting for the one seed. Okay, but the difference between the one seed and like the six seed is like 3, 4 games. Not talking about a significant difference there. Let me just, you know what? Let me see. I could be dead wrong there. Let me pull it up. Okay. OKC right now is the one seed. And the fourth seed is 5 games back. Come on, man. Come on. The fourth seed is 5 games back. If you said OKC was supposed to be the fourth seed, what would you say? Oh no, they're too young to be the fourth seed. What? What do you mean? So the Pelicans are not young? The Pelicans were the one seed before injuries hit them last year. Oh, they got CJ McCollum. He's not young. Man, get out of here. Get out of here. I never bought that. I never bought that. So I'm not giving the coach credit for having a talented team and playing as talented as they are. Like, I don't. Oh, but they're better than Denver. And then Denver has been cruise control for a lot of the year. So I don't. Minnesota is right there with them. And Minnesota has been without Cat for a couple of weeks now. So are they not young? Is Minnesota not young? Are they too young to win? Cat too old to fall into that category now? I don't buy that, and he shouldn't win Coach of the Year based on that notion. Like, I think it's a false notion, and he shouldn't win Coach of the Year based on that. That's not to say he hasn't had a great coaching year, but that's not how you should win. You shouldn't win Coach of the Year because everyone thinks your team is too talented but too young to win. They were in the play-in tournament last year with no Chet Holmgren. So come on, man. And then you look at Chris Finch in Minnesota. To me, he's had to juggle a lot more issue. He's had to juggle a lot more issue. Cat is a great player, but he's had a great offensive season statistically, but it's been a lot to juggle what Cat does on both sides of the floor, along with Rudy Gobert, the budding Anthony Edwards. It's been a lot to juggle. So I can understand, and now Cat's hurt and they've been maintaining their winning. I can understand as we speak. I think they're about to beat Denver. Yep, they beat Denver with no Cat. So I can understand an argument for Chris Finch being Coach of the Year. It's just that, remember that whole every time Brunson steps on the floor, the other team has a better player? I'm pretty sure the people who say that would say that they have two players that are better than Brunson. I'm pretty sure that you get a lot of these talking heads in the room, they will tell you that they have two players who are better than Brunson. At least one, we know that, but two. So why is their coach better than Tom Thibodeau this season when Tom has had scores more injuries than they have? And he doesn't have Anthony Edwards. He didn't have Cat all year, most of the year, doing what he's doing. He didn't have Rudy Gobert. Like, come on. So give Finch credit, but not over Tibbs. And then that leaves Jamal Mosley, and who, let's be honest, and you can look at the Celtics too. Like, come on. But you know what? The Celtics are a really talented team. Let's stop it. But Jamal Mosley has done a great job with the Orlando Magic. I think there were people who thought they'd be a little better this year, but they ain't expect them to be where they are right now. But please understand, when you look at the standings, and you can throw the Knicks in the mix here too, even though I think the Knicks are 2 games up of Orlando right now. The difference between the 3 seed, 4 seed, and 5 seed, and the 7 seed is not very much. So if you said that Orlando would be the 7 seed in the Eastern Conference, nobody would bat an eye at you. But they're the fifth seed, and they're only a couple games ahead of the seventh seed, and we want Jamal Mosley to get Coach of the Year. And once again, people will say, oh, Jalen Brunson is not as good as Paolo Banchero. Remember that in December? Not as good as Paolo Banchero. Oh, okay. So Paolo's better. Paolo's better than Brunson. They're more talented. They have Franz Wagner. They have Cole Anthony and Suggs. And Jonathan Isaac is like a cheat code now, lowest of keys. Even though they're struggling a little bit lately. He's a cheat code defensively, and that's why I don't really want to play him in the first round, but whatever, I'm gonna get started on that. So all of a sudden you can have talented teams, more talented than Tom Thibodeau's team, but you can win Coach of the Year. Especially with all of these injuries. The fact that Tom is where he is with all the injuries he has, that he has had all year, is a credit to him, is a credit to the entire roster. And it starts at the top. And you can't take credit away from him. You can't find a better actual, literal coaching job in the league today. Nobody has had to navigate these types of injuries for this long and kept their head above water the way Tom Thibodeau has with this Knicks team. Nobody has. Nobody has. The Knicks had the number one defense in March. And the season started with people talking about Mitchell Robinson for Defensive Player of the Year conversation. And then they brought in OG Anunoby, who had a historic start to his Knicks tenure and made the Knicks elite defensively and had an historic plus minus when he came to the team, and he has not played but two games in 20 something games. And the Knicks still have the number one defense in March. And if not for a bad loss to San Antonio, it would be the third seed in the Eastern Conference. Nobody in the Eastern Conference is doing a better job coaching than he is. And nobody in the Western Conference has done a better job coaching than he has. Good job? Yes. No one has done a better job. Give the man credit. Anyway, follow at Sports Ethos on Twitter. At Ethos Knicks, Andre Gallagher at The Watchers 7. Until next time.